Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today we open our show with some good news for Aztecs fans. And then on our Green Scene Report, we'll tell you about Sandag's vote to appeal a court ruling over its regional transportation plan. At a time when there's been a lot in the national news about tensions between police officers and minority communities, we'll have some good news for you about some local law enforcement officers who are reaching out to help disadvantaged children this holiday season in San Diego's Shop with a Cop event. The Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation is also pitching in to help children in need with its annual toy drive. If you see smoke over East County, you'll want to hear about some controlled burns coming up in Cleveland National Forest. And if you need legal help, stay tuned for details on some free legal clinics coming up in El Cajon. We'll also tell you how to nominate someone you know for El Cajon Citizen of the Year. Our newsmaker interviews today are with John Vigil with the La Mesa Village Merchants Association and Shannon O'Dunn, owner of O'Dunn Fine Art. They'll be telling you about La Mesa's Christmas in the Village celebration coming up this weekend. And in honor of Pearl Harbor Day, we're going to replay our Sounds of History interview from last year with Dr. Ken Hansen, who was in Pearl Harbor on that fateful day. On the second half of our show, you'll hear from a very talented singer, songwriter, and actress, Danny Marie, who grew up in East County and is getting a lot of attention lately in Nashville, Memphis, San Diego, and L.A. Last week's rains have resulted in Cal Fire lifting a burn ban, and we'll have some tips on how to burn your leaves and yard clippings safely. On our crime scene report, hear details about a bomb threat made against SDG&E. We'll also have a public news service report about problems caused by energy companies extracting oil and gas on our public lands in California. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. This is Miriam Raftery with some good news for San Diego sports fans. When the Poinsettia Bowl kicks off at Qualcomm Stadium in San Diego on December 23rd, the San Diego State Aztecs will be making the team's fifth consecutive bowl appearance. This year, the Aztecs have accepted an invitation to play the Navy. The odds are looking good for SDSU since the Aztecs have beaten the Navy all three times the two teams have squared off in the past, and the Aztecs are enjoying a hot season this year. Kickoff will be at 6:30 p.m. on December 23rd, and for tickets you can visit goaztecs.com. This is Miriam Raftery with some good news for San Diego sports fans. When the Poinsettia Bowl kicks off at Qualcomm Stadium in San Diego on December 23rd, the San Diego State Aztecs will be making the team's fifth consecutive bowl appearance. This year, the Aztecs have accepted an invitation to play the Navy. The odds are looking good for SDSU since the Aztecs have beaten the Navy all three times the two teams have squared off in the past, and the Aztecs are enjoying a hot season this year. Kickoff will be at 6:30 p.m. on December 23rd, and for tickets you can visit goaztecs.com. San Diego County Sheriff deputies and probation officers took part in a multi-agency juvenile team sweep of the Sports Arena Target store this Saturday. But they weren't looking to arrest anyone. Their mission was to give 330 deserving, underprivileged children a happier holiday season at an event called Shop with a Cop, and every law enforcement agency in the county joined in. In past years, when officers took needy children shopping, they gave each $100 to spend buying gifts for their family members, teaching children the spirit of giving. This year, an anonymous donor played Secret Santa, pitching in an extra $50 for each child, so they each had $150 to spend. La Mesa Police Officer Colin Atwood helped coordinate the festivities, which were hosted by La Mesa and El Cajon Police Departments, with sponsorship from the San Diego Crime Commission, SeaWorld Target, and Star Pal. The day began at SeaWorld, where law enforcement officers and deputies paired up with selected third graders for their early Christmas shopping spree. Senior Probation Officer Angelica Orozco is usually assigned to the Juvenile Gang Suppression Unit and works with a lot of underprivileged families in her job. So when she was approached to participate in this event, she was thrilled to take part. She says, "It reminds me of why I chose this career in the first place, to see the joy of the children and to interact with them in a different environment. We get to experience something special with them that they probably wouldn't have the opportunity to do." Orozco adds that the event is also a good opportunity for some of these children who have a family history with law enforcement to see that officers can be trusted and are there to help. The children were treated to a special breakfast with their law enforcement buddy and a special Pets Rule show at SeaWorld. From there, they were led outside, where Santa Claus buzzed the parking lot in the San Diego Police Department helicopter and led the way to the Target store on Midway. The children got to activate the lights and sirens for a Code 3 caravan response to the store, where they got to choose gifts for their family members. And on occasion, when the kids went over budget, some of the officers quietly made up the difference at the cash register without the children realizing. Volunteers helped gift wrap presents, and to finish up the special day, children had an opportunity to visit with Santa Claus and share their own holiday wishes. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
On Friday, firefighters from Viejas headed out for a shopping spree at a local shopping center buying bicycles. It's all part of the East County Toy and Food Drive. Last year, the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation donated more toys than any other business or organization, and they're hoping to break their own record this year. On the evening of December 10th, Viejas invites the public to a special event where the toys will be revealed. Guests can donate toys or bid on silent auction prizes, with all funds donated to the Salvation Army's East County Toy and Food Drive to help families in need this holiday season. The Viejas Band of Kumeyaay Indians invites you to join them poolside at the Viejas Hotel from 6 to 9 p.m. This is an outdoor event, so dress accordingly. For East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
This is a breaking news alert live from the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service.
This is Miriam Raftery with some information about controlled burns being planned by Cleveland National Forest. The Forest Service will conduct burns from December of this year through June of next year, as weather and fuel conditions permit, in the Descanso, Palomar, and Trabuco Ranger districts. Smoke could be visible across much of East County. Forest Supervisor William Metz says prescribed fire projects help protect communities by reducing adjacent forest vegetation and fuels while increasing opportunities for firefighters to get the upper hand on wildfires sooner. Prescribed fires also support our ecological restoration goals by protecting wildlife habitat and important watershed areas and values, he added. According to the U.S. Forest Service, trained Forest Service crews prepare for the prescribed burns by cutting excess trees and shrubs in the summer months and then burning the vegetation in winter during conditions that allow for safe operations and minimal smoke disruption. By burning the extra fuels in forested and chaparral areas under less severe conditions, prescribed fires also support ecological restoration as fire is reintroduced into ecosystems that depend on it for regeneration. Prescribed burning and removal of fuels also helps reduce intensity of wildfires during the summer months. The burns planned include 500 to 700 acres in the Descanso Ranger District near the communities of Mount Laguna, Alpine, and Pine Valley. In addition, the Palomar Ranger District will have 300 to 700 acres of prescribed burns north of Sunrise Highway near Ramona, Santa Isabel, San Diego Country Estates, Julian, Warner Springs, and Palomar Mountain. And another 500 to 700 acres are slated for burning in the Trabuco Ranger District up by Capistrano and Corona. If you have any questions on these controlled burns, contact the Cleveland National Forest Ranger District nearest you. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
This is Leon Thompson with East County Magazine. The San Diego County Law Library announces a free legal clinic in El Cajon at 250 East Main Street. The clinic will provide free legal services on the next two Wednesdays, December 10th and 17th, in the areas of family law, immigration, consumer law, employment law, business law, wills and trusts, civil litigation, and more. To schedule an appointment, you can call 619-550-4879. Walk-ins are also welcome.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso. And tonight we are on location in downtown La Mesa, where it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. And that's because the Christmas in the Village Winter Wonderland celebration is coming up on December 12th and 13th. I'm here today with two very special guests. The first is John Vigil, who is the executive director of the La Mesa Village Merchants Association. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam, very much.
And I understand you've also got a special title in your role as putting together this whole festival. What's that?
I am the chief elf of Christmas in the Village.
Very good. I'm also here with Shannon O'Dunn. Shannon is a board member also for the La Mesa Village Merchants Association, and she's the owner of the O'Dunn Fine Art Gallery here in downtown La Mesa. Shannon, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Miriam. It's always a pleasure.
John, can you start by telling our listeners who may not have been to the Christmas in the Village celebration before what it's all about?
Well, Christmas in the Village will be on Friday and Saturday, December 12th and 13th. We have a pre-parade celebration beginning at 4:30. We have a parade starting at 5. We do have stages beginning at 6:30, 7:30, and 8:30. We also have fire pits. We have Santa. We'll be here at the Goodwill Plaza.
Wonderful. Yeah, the whole village really transforms into a Victorian-style winter wonderland. I understand you may see, what, strolling carolers and chestnuts roasting on an open fire?
You'll see all of that. And we have 40,000 twinkly lights here in the village right now.
Beautiful. It's just gorgeous. Shannon, you are one of the merchants here. And I understand that this is a very special year for the merchants, and it's particularly important for this event to be a success because the merchants have been going through some hard times this year due to the upgrades that the city has been making. It's a wonderful improvement project for the village, but it's also meant some disruption, streets torn up. What kind of effect has that had on the merchants down here?
Miriam, I think there are a combination of factors that are impacting retail here in the village. Certainly the streetscape has confused people, but honestly, in the last 6 months or the second half of this year, that's only been 2 months, and most of us are feeling an impact from a recovery which has not really hit retail, certainly in the small business sector. So the streetscapes are a temporary thing that we're stubbing our toe on. I think the economy is a longer wavelength problem that hasn't been solved, and we're seeing it across the board in a variety of retail settings.
Yeah, that's a good point, because the streetscape comes on top of a couple of years of or more of recession, where the merchants have been kind of hanging in there waiting for better times. But in your case, you had no sidewalk for
2 months. We've had backhoes parked out front and sidewalks jackhammered and so on. But I think we need to take the long run. The city's doing some wonderful upgrades. This village will be safer and better lighted and, I think, overall better looking for our visitors. That's the most important thing, as well as enhancing what the merchants bring to the street as well.
Now, the City Council has done an extraordinary thing to encourage visitors to come back to the village.
The city has done a great thing. They have taken all the construction off La Mesa Boulevard. They have moved it to Palm Avenue. I just had a meeting with the city on Wednesday, and they have agreed to clear Palm Avenue for us. Mm-hmm. So all the visitors do know that La Mesa will be open. Christmas in the Village will be unaffected.
And also there is free parking. The City Council voted to make no fees for the parking meters from now to the end of the year. It is a two-hour limit, but you can come down and not worry about, you know, having to have those quarters.
And during the event, there is no parking meter enforcement at all. Also, it is 2 hours on La Mesa Boulevard. Do read the signs in the back lot on Lemon Avenue. It's also 2 hours. But in the Allison Street parking lot, you do get 4 hours free.
There you go. Can you give us a few more details about what else is going to be happening, what some of the entertainment is going to be at this year's event?
Christmas in the Village always has local entertainment. We're talking things for children. We're talking puppet shows. We're talking local bands, entertainment such as singing, dancing, caroling, barbershop quartet.
And face painting for the children?
Absolutely. We have face painters. Also people doing balloons. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and there's even pony rides and a toy drive. People can bring their new unwrapped toys to Cosmos Coffee if they want to donate to help families in need. Now, are the stores and the restaurants down here all staying open late for the occasion?
Everyone's staying open late. Stores will be open till 10 o'clock.
And I understand some of the merchants are doing some special things for visitors. Shannon, what's going on at your gallery?
We always enjoy Christmas in the Village. This is one of the nicest crowds we get here. It's so friendly and people in the spirit of the season, however you celebrate these December holidays. I'll personally have beverages and snacks out for folks, but I'm just looking forward to welcoming and seeing some of you I just see once a year come through, as well as some new visitors. We hope you'll come down and enjoy this free family event.
Very good. Thank you, Shannon. John, if people want to get more information about Christmas in the Village, where can they go?
Go to our website at lmvma.com. That's the La Mesa Village Merchants Association website, and you get all the information. If you have questions, you can even call me.
Now, where will Santa Claus be for those parents that want to bring little ones down? When and where can they find Santa?
Santa will be last in our parade. He'll be coming in on our fire truck. Our fire truck will park at Spring Street and La Mesa Boulevard, right in front of the Goodwill Plaza. Santa will be in the Goodwill Plaza this year. Christmas in the Village is a free event. We welcome everyone to come on out and enjoy themselves.
Just remember, it's 5 to 10, December 12th and 13th. And I think you'll find that our individual merchants are all promoting sales prices and giftable items this season.
So you can do your holiday shopping in between listening to all that wonderful music and visiting with Santa and enjoying the parade.
And don't forget our fire pits.
Enjoy those chestnuts. Thank you very much for joining us on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ. Any final words for our listeners, folks?
We invite all our friends and families to enjoy Christmas in the Village. Merry Christmas, everybody!
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Do you know someone who has selflessly worked to better the El Cajon community? Nominations are now being accepted for El Cajon Citizen of the Year through December 19th. Nominees don't have to live in El Cajon, but their efforts must benefit the City of El Cajon to qualify. Anyone who has served the City of El Cajon and its citizens can be nominated. That includes volunteer activities in the best interest of the El Cajon community. People currently seeking public office are not eligible. The nominations deadline is December 19th at 4 p.m. Nominations should be turned in to the East County Chamber of Commerce office at 201 South Magnolia Avenue in El Cajon. Emailed nominations will not be accepted. The selection committee will meet on January 5th to vote for the El Cajon Citizen of the Year, who will be honored at a luncheon on February the 3rd. For more information or an application, please contact Drum McComber at 619-442-5313. This has been Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
This week is the anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor by Japan during World War II, and we thought it would be a good time to replay our interview with Dr. Kenneth Hansen of La Mesa, who was in Hawaii on that fateful day and shares his recollections with us from when he was a young boy.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, bringing you the sounds of history.
This is Miriam Raftery filling in for Helen Ofield on the sounds of history on East County Magazine's show on KNSJ. Today, I'm very honored to have as my guest Ken Hansen, my next-door neighbor. All week, we've been talking with staff and friends and people across East County about their most interesting holiday recollections, and so today, Ken is going to share one of his. But first, a little bit of background. Ken, you were just a young man when your family moved to Hawaii in 1937. I understand that was a very auspicious day.
That is correct. We sailed on the old Malolo from Los Angeles to San Francisco and then to Hawaii. And the day that we sailed from San Francisco was the day that Amelia Earhart went down.
My goodness.
And which became the headline news for days and weeks.
Around the world.
So that was, in a sense, made that day very special that I remember sailing for Hawaii to live. And I was very excited about the whole thing. Also, we sailed under the Golden Gate Bridge weeks after it had opened.
San Francisco.
That, too, was very exciting as I think back.
Now, fast forward a couple of years to December 7th, 1941. You were living in Honolulu that holiday season, or just before the Christmas season, when Pearl Harbor was bombed. What was the first inkling you had that something was very wrong?
I lived in Honolulu at the time. I was home with my father and a university student who lived with us.
And you were how old?
I was 13, in eighth grade, and we could hear noises off in the distance, rumblings. But there had been a lot of preliminary building up of defense-type noises prior to this day as the possibility of war had escalated. So nothing much was made of these sounds except that one of us said, that must be Punch Bowl erupting.
The volcano.
Punch Bowl is an extinct volcano in Honolulu, which is now a national cemetery of renown.
But at that time,
it was a place where we went for picnics. Well, obviously, Punch Bowl wasn't erupting, and we had a frantic telephone call from my aunt, mm-hmm. who lived in a home on the beach beside Diamond Head, and she had seen with her own eyes a Japanese plane go by very low, so that she actually had eye contact, she thought, with the pilot.
Wow.
And she frantically called us and said that we are being attacked and don't move, like everybody else was saying.
Now, you were taking a typing class in school at the time, and I understand that very night you sat down at home with your typewriter and you typed up a memoir. I can't
believe that I did it, but yes, I was taking taking typing, and of course, just been to class, the last class on Friday.
Would you be willing to read it to us?
Sure. I'll read part of it, and we can talk about part of it, too.
And you've told me this was one of the most memorable days in your life?
This was indeed a memorable day in that things stand out so clearly, even now, just as the other day in my life, my wedding day, stands out with great detail. I call this Memoirs of a Bombay Day. That was my 13-year-old sense of humor. We were having breakfast, as usual, on Sunday morning, Nabucco, the university student at our house, and I, when we heard a faint rumbling in the distance. Nabucco went to the door and said to me, Punch Bowl must be erupting. Well, we just laughed and forgot about that. And that was around 7:45 or 8 o'clock, and about a quarter to nine, I was getting ready to go to Sunday school, which I was supposed to do, when my aunt called frantically from where she lived off of Diamond Head on the beach and said, turn the radio on quickly, that Waianae was under fire. Waianae was one of the areas that was hit, but only one of many. We turned it on right away and were just in time to hear that Oahu was under attack, that we should stay calm, go at once to our houses, stay put, and keep the radio on all time. My father heard this, I'm ad-libbing now, and he found this very hard to believe, as did many people in the islands, that something actually bad was happening. They wanted to assume that this was practice.
Sure.
And it wasn't real, but it was real.
It had to be terrifying for you.
I wasn't terrified. This was a sense of thrill and excitement and fear all mixed up in a 13-year-old's mind. My mother was away at the time that this was happening.
Back to the memoir now.
Yes. When my daddy just laughed and said it was all practice or something like that, not to worry about it, she called, again frantically like my aunt, and said what she was seeing. She happened to be working with a group of university students at an area called Aiea Heights, which overlooks Pearl Harbor, so she sat there and was seeing what was happening. And she, too, said, don't move, I'll get home with the car as soon as I can. She had three students that she had to take home first. Announcements kept coming over the wire saying for no one to go out on the streets and for everyone to get off and stay off them. Daddy still laughed and said that since Sunday school was not very far away, that I might as well go. I refused. Meanwhile, we could see puffs of smoke coming up over the hills, and hear what sounded like shooting and so forth. I begged to stay home. Then Mother got home, and she was able to describe precisely what she had been seeing. But I must say that even then, my father had trouble believing it. When he saw it in print, the first newspapers came out a little later in the morning through the neighborhoods, extra, extra, and he could see it. He gave in.
Your parents were very involved in this whole thing. Your mother, I understand, had a very close call herself.
She had to drive home, and there were several areas where anti-aircraft fire had come from Pearl Harbor into Honolulu. There was no actual bombing of Honolulu, but there were places where fires were started, and she could have been hit by an anti-aircraft.
It was shrapnel.
Shrapnel, yeah, whatever. Anyway, she got home safely, delivered her students, and all was well.
Your father worked at the university.
Yes. My dad worked for the Agricultural Extension Service at the University of Hawaii. And with his expertise, he and others in his office were immediately taken by the government. First of all, military rule took over immediately that day. Mm. Military rule was called. And he and others were called to the Capitol downtown. They cleared the throne room of the thrones and put in desks immediately. So the very next day, Monday, he was at a desk down there helping to assess the food situation for Oahu and the other islands, finding out how much was available and where it was available and how it was going to be distributed.
I understand that your father also wrote a memoir, Ken, of that time. Could you read a little bit of what he wrote?
He did, with considerable detail, and we are certainly grateful to him for having sat down and done that in the midst of a terribly busy time. He was working at the Extension Service in food distribution and production, and the director already had a job on the Territorial Food Committee, and they went to work even Sunday morning, and by Monday my father was in his office at the Capitol. Inventories of food and feed were made instantly. I'm reading from his own writing. The grocery stores were crowded and then ordered closed Tuesday for inventory. Note that the situation is different here than on the mainland. 65% of our food, and again I'm quoting, is imported. And if no ships come in, we eat sparingly. Wednesday, when the stores were opened and normal requirements were sold, but the shelves were low. The big wholesalers hold the keys, which appear to be good. There are relatively few wholesalers in town, and inventories were easily made. One small job I had to do was get information from 15 dealers of food by Monday morning between 11 and 11:45. The Central Committee met at Iolani Palace by noon. We are now standing by for more. This was written the day after.
Yeah, and your father's name was?
Kenneth Hansen.
Just like yours, so you're Kenneth Hansen.
Yep.
The second. Very good. Thank you for sharing that. So what was that first night like? Here you're at home.
The
island's just been bombed.
The first night was certainly memorable for an excitable 13-year-old.
You've written about it, I see.
Our house was situated on a hill, and we normally had a nice view with many lights to be seen. Of course, this was total blackout then, and we sat and peered out the windows at total blackness. And the big thing was not knowing, were they coming back? Were they coming back that night? Were they going to land the next day on the beaches? Were they coming to get us? What was going to happen?
Very troubling.
Did not know. Manoa Valley, where I lived, was usually bright with lights, and it was gray as the mountains behind it. Every so often we could see a blue light from a car, but they did not last long. About 8:15, we managed to find our beds and pile in them. I think all of us were glad to do so.
Now, you were active in the Boy Scouts at the time, and I understand that they helped with some of the things that needed to be done.
Yeah, at the time, I was in Troop 1 of Honolulu, and the very next day, by afternoon, they had gotten hold of us and corralled us, and we met at a school, and we were trucked downtown Honolulu, where we were assigned to the city hall, well, other places too, but I was at the city hall. We helped with sandbagging.
Sandbagging to protect against shrapnel.
Building up against the buildings, yes. We were supposed to be messengers and take messages from one downtown building to another, which didn't particularly happen, but again, looking up to the sky and hearing or seeing a plane made us wonder if they were coming back. Nobody knew who was coming or when. So that was part of the excitement and fear of the day. It was a mixture of excitement and fear.
Now, you also volunteered at a hospital with the Scouts.
Well, with the Scouts, we were out of school for 2 months or more.
No school for 2 months.
And most of the time we were busy, thanks to the scouts, because we were assigned to such jobs as handing out gas masks at schools, helping with draft physicals because there was major drafting going on at the time, and working at a hospital, carrying boxes and doing whatever needed doing. Every place was a beehive of activity. And it was good. It kept us off the streets and doing something that was
trouble.
That was helpful.
There you go.
Yes, indeed.
Now, when Christmas came along, it was very different that year. Obviously, no holiday lights. The blackout was still
in effect. Total blackout. Christmas came along 2.5 weeks later.
Did you have a Christmas tree?
And no Christmas trees. A freighter carrying evergreens from the state of Washington was torpedoed somewhere between Washington and Honolulu. And that would have been most of the trees that people would have bought.
Mm-hmm.
So
what
down,
did you do?
Down they went. So we had to make do. We pulled up banana leaves and other things from the yard or the yard next door, and we got out the ribbons and the ornaments and put them on. Of course, no lights, because at that time mm-hmm. we, at night, had only a storeroom with no windows to sit in if we wanted to be up and at 'em.
Wow.
Eventually, the kitchen was blacked off with denim and tape and stuff so we could sit in the kitchen. But it's pretty hot and humid in Hawaii, and it wasn't...
Yes, it is.
It wasn't pleasant sitting in a room all evening. So.
No, you're still opening the windows and enjoying those ocean
yeah,
breezes.
Yeah, so then it had to be dark.
Now, for holiday dinner, was that affected?
I can't remember our holiday dinner. We were with my uncle and aunt and family, mm-hmm. and...
You've told me that traditionally in your family... Your grandfather owned a turkey ranch
We expected a turkey from California, since my grandfather owned a turkey ranch and usually had a turkey or two fattened up, especially for us, for the holidays.
But not that year?
No, it may have been that year we had it for Thanksgiving. I just don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, it probably went down on another ship.
Oh, my goodness. So this went on for 4 years. You stayed in the islands throughout the war, I understand.
Yes, yes. We... stayed until it was time for me to go away to college. An amazing time to have lived there. In many ways, we were probably like normal teenagers, but our schooling was disrupted because the armed forces took over many of the schools. My particular school, called an intermediate school, was divided in three parts, and we were left with the Quonset hut-type part of the school, and the main part was taken over by the Army, and we had classes only half a day, and other parts of our school had to go to elementary schools that were available for other half days. So we were divided up into actually three parts and scattered around the city. And then when it came time for high school, 10th grade, and I was transferred to Punahou School, the Army had the school, and we were given and using a building at the University of Hawaii. Mm. The School of Education was our school until August of 1945, and the war was over, and the Army immediately gave the school back, and there was a frantic rush to put it back in order.
Now, you went on later in life to become a very successful doctor. Did those early days working in that hospital and seeing all the injuries and the suffering that you must have seen as a young man, did that influence your decision to want to help people by becoming a physician?
I'm pretty sure it did. I think, really, of those first days of the war when I got to be in the hospital and going all over and carrying things and having a feel for it. And then 2 years later, along around 10th grade, I had a summer job at the hospital where I really saw things going on and had a good feel for it and felt like I liked it. I didn't mind the sights and so mm-hmm. forth and so on, working with patients, carrying dishes, and so
mm-hmm.
forth.
Well, there you go.
So that must have been an influence as I look back, yes.
So often this time of year we hear the term peace on earth, and I think a lot of us probably don't stop to reflect on how much we take that for granted until you've been through something like the bombing of Pearl Harbor and have gone on to tell about that.
Yes, peace on earth escaped us that year, 1941, and through the awful years of the Second World War. And during this time, I, of course, along with my schoolmates, matured and learned something about the world. And by the time the war was over, we knew an awful lot more than we did as eighth graders when it all started.
I can imagine. Well, Ken, thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine show here on KNSJ.
It is a pleasure to be here and think about it and talk about it.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
This is Leon Thompson reporting on a bomb threat. A Valley Center man has been arrested and charged with making a bomb threat. Fritz Versteeg sent an email to an NBC TV news station threatening to place explosive targeting San Diego Gas and Electric Company work trucks after a dispute with the company went unresolved, he claimed. After the threat, sheriff's bomb and arson investigators shut down the Spearhead Trail area for 2 hours on December 4th to assure that the area was safe. Subsequently, deputies arrested Versteeg, said Sheriff Jeff Lahon. Versteeg blamed SDG&E for damaging an earthen wall on his property that protects against flooding. The damage reportedly occurred when the utility installed a metal post. Versteeg claimed the company did not respond to his complaints and said he planned to bury a landmine near SDG&E trucks. However, no explosives were found in a search of his property and the vicinity.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio here in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. My very special guest today is Danny Marie, who is a local singer, songwriter, and actress who is making waves on the music scene in San Diego, Memphis, Nashville, and Los Angeles. Folks here in East County may know her as Daniel Marie Pupa. She grew up in Alpine. And since graduating from Steel Canyon High School in East County, she has released an EP. She's got a CD coming out with her Danny Marie Band playing emotional songs that tell a story, or what she describes as pop country that rocks. One of her original songs, Flavor of the Week, was featured in a new movie, Music High, which also featured Danny Marie performing in a high school battle of the bands scene. Her band also won a Golden Reel Award for Best Music Video for Flavor of the Week from the Nevada International Film Festival. The music video had its world premiere at the Memphis International Film and Music Festival in 2013, where Danny Marie and her drummer performed in a music showcase. In addition, she was a backup singer for Itch on his music video, Another Man, and she has an acting role in a movie coming out soon, Past the Light, which will be hitting the theaters in February. Her band has performed at locations in Nashville and Southern California, including the San Diego County Fair, and now Danny Marie is performing solo in local night spots here in San Diego and East County. Danny Marie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
How did you first get involved in music?
I first got involved in music a long time ago when I was 6 years old. I told my mom I really wanted to be a pop star when I grew up, and she had mentioned that, you know, we didn't have really musical genes in our family, so she was awesome, and she took me to singing classes. Upon singing classes, I did musical theater up until high school, and I did show choir, and then for my 16th birthday, my dad gave me a guitar instead of a car, and I learned how to play and fell in love with country music and decided that is what I've wanted to do for the rest of my life.
Good for you. I know you've stated that rock stars don't go to college, which is a pretty bold statement, but it sounds like your family has been really supportive of your career choice.
Yes, okay, rock stars don't go to college. That is a comment that can't be taken out of context, because when I said that, it was my senior year of high school, and we were doing our graduating show choir performance, and at the very end of the show that night, on stage, our show choir teacher came on and was saying how proud of us she was, us seniors, and she said, I'm going to walk around, I'll hand the mic to each senior, and they're going to say what college they're going to. And I immediately found my mom in the audience and locked eyes with her and was like, oh my gosh, mom, what do I say? Like, you know, and then when the mic came to me, I didn't know what to say. And so I said, rock stars don't go to college. And the audience cracked up, and I didn't plan on saying that. So no, I do think college is a great thing, but I said that in the moment of, oh my gosh, I'm planning on being a rock star when I grow up, and I don't have plans to go to college. So,
well, it sounds like
that.
You're well on your way to getting there. So tell us, how did you get your first big break in the music industry? It's a tough industry to break into for a lot of folks.
Yeah, I feel like big breaks are kind of a funny thing, because I feel like in the end it's all a bunch of little breaks that end up adding up to something huge. But I think one thing that has really made a difference in my career was my song Flavor of the Week getting into the movie Music High, which should be released sometime in the near future. It has some very notable names in the film, and that was just, in my opinion, kind of a God thing. My mom and I were attending a music business seminar, happened to sit next to this guy. We became friends with him. A couple months later, he called us and said, "Hey, I was doing some music direction for a film, and the director loved your song. Can we proceed from there?" And so that was very cool. Not only is the song in the movie, but I got to be in the movie as a guitar player while the actress is lip syncing over my voice, which I thought was so cool. And from there, we did a music video, which will be, you know, part of the DVD when the movie comes out. So
yeah, and then
that
this
was
is
very cool.
The music video that's been just winning awards every place all over. It's very funny. I saw it.
Cool.
I think it's something that really strikes a chord.
Yeah.
This theme of the sort of campus Casanova. There hasn't everybody known one of those kind of guys,
right,
where you find out the same love note he gives you, he gave to lots of other girls.
Yeah, absolutely. And that music video was cool because that was a family project. My mom produced it. My dad shot it.
Yeah.
It was my song. So it was cool to have that be a family project.
Yeah, and in the end, Romeo kind of gets what he has coming to him.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it's a fun video.
Very good. So what kind of reactions have you gotten to your music from the people that you grew up with, some of the folks in high school? Maybe some of them may have even recognized themselves in the music.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had a lot of people that I went to high school with. I wasn't a cool kid in high school at all. I was definitely like a drama, show choir, you know, geek, nerd, whatever. And so it's kind of cool now to see these people who I wasn't really friends with. Now they're, you know, Facebooking me, and it's super cool. A lot of them will come to my shows, will get my music online. So that's been really neat. And I've definitely had a few friends that have stuck with me through all of it, and regardless of my busy schedule or whatever, have always supported me, and that's really nice.
Very good. I understand that you just recently went to Nashville. How did that go?
Yeah. I love Nashville. I describe it as Disneyland. I feel like it's a magical place. It's so great, from the people to the food to the music. Everything there is just awesome. I went there to record my CD. We did that in August, and that was a really cool experience.
Speaking of Disney, I understand you have a role in a new movie coming out called Past the Light. Tell us about that.
Past the Light is due to come out, I believe, in February of 2015, and that was actually the very first project I worked on when I moved to Los Angeles about 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I actually showed up there to do background work the first day, and the producer of the movie ended up keeping five of us kids that were background to work on set almost every day for 2 months. So that was really cool. And my best friends from LA to this day are the people that I met on the set doing that movie.
And was this a Disney movie?
It's not a Disney movie, but a lot of the main characters in it are famous from Disney Channel. So, yeah, but it's very cool. I got to go to the screening, the premiere of it, and it's just a phenomenal movie. I can't wait for it to come out.
Very good. And that's hitting theaters when?
February of 2015.
Past the Light, okay. Can you tell us where you draw inspiration for the music that you write?
Yeah, I feel like it's different almost every time. Lately, there's been a consistent thing of I'm always looking for hooks. Country music a lot of times is about, you know, the hooks of the song. And so
yeah.
I'm always listening in my daily conversation. Somebody will say something and I'm like, oh my gosh. And I have a ongoing list in my phone of little things that I write down. And or sometimes it'll be honestly another song that I hear that I'm just overwhelmed with that certain emotion. And I'll write something, you know, based off that emotion. And I draw a lot of my inspiration from my favorite musicians.
You once said, "I love it when people tell me that one of my songs made them cry." Why is that?
I believe if a song is powerful enough to make you cry, then I've done my job as an artist, as a vocalist, as a songwriter. I was recently, it was my plane ride, I believe, back from Nashville when I had been recording there. And I sat next to this guy on the plane. We kind of became friends, and very cool guy, you know, like a middle-aged man, and I ended up playing some of my songs for him. And when he heard one song specifically called Here Comes the Bride that I wrote a few years ago, he started crying. And wow. This is this middle-aged man on an airplane, and I'm like, oh my gosh. And to me, I'm just like, because other songs make me cry, and that's why I love those artists. Mm-hmm. It's not always about crying. It's about having a good time, too, but I just feel accomplished if someone tells me that they cry when they hear my music.
Yeah, your songs tell stories, absolutely. Which certainly comes from the country music genre, and yet they also have sort of a pop flair, rock and roll flair that crosses genres and I think transcends generations, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
Which brings us to time to share some of those songs with our listeners. What music would you like us to share with our listeners today, Danny Marie, and can you tell us a little bit about the first song?
Yes. The first song that I would like to share with you is called Anything I Wanna Be, and it is the title track of my record that will be released this upcoming year. Anything I Wanna Be was inspired when I was living in Los Angeles. Living in LA was definitely a really intense experience. There's so many pressures there from the industry, from Hollywood itself, that they put on women to always look airbrushed, to be perfect on the inside and out. Yeah. And even if you're not living up there in the industry, I feel like as a girl, you can totally relate to that because we get that through magazines and through movies and through TV. And I was working really hard up in LA. I was sharing a one-bedroom apartment with three girls. And one day I just sat down and I was looking at myself in the mirror and this song literally just came out. It's one of the very few songs I can just say just came out in an instant.
Okay. Yeah. So let's listen now to an excerpt from Anything I Want to Be.
My face, see all the things I wish I could erase. Do I look too fat? Will I ever fit in? Doesn't matter, nobody's listening. Can't find anyone who's just like me with the scars on my heart that always bleed. Dear Hollywood, one day you'll see I am anything I wanna be. Cause those words that you speak, they just judge and critique. Say give up on my dreams, but I am anything I wanna be. So I'll stand on my feet. Anything I wanna be.
That was wonderful, Danny Marie. What is the next song that you'd like to share?
The next song is called Counting Down Summertime. I love this song because it's super fun, super upbeat. We like to say it's bro country with a dose of estrogen. Bro country is blowing up the airwaves right now, and I have, you know, I'm obviously a girl, and so it's cool to have maybe bro country with a feminine take on it. This song has a rap at the end, which I love, so it's very upbeat. It's a country party song.
That sounds fascinating. Let's listen to an excerpt now.
The jaws on the boys when they roll up, see the girls in their jacked up toys. Dirt road dance floor with the cricket soundtrack, firefly disco ball. Oh, when you twirl me like that, last night a summer boy. So let's raise our cups, cause time's flying like the dust we kick it up. Moon hanging by us like a country clock, shining, sinking, telling us how much time we got. Goodbye to Tim. Pontoons and sunshine, no hit and rewind, counting down summertime. So let's make the most of every tick-tock. Crank out memories while I got you on my watch. Midnight's about to strike, lips move towards mine. Loving you and I'm counting down summertime. Na-na-na-na-na, na-na-na-na-na. And counting down summertime. Na-na-na-na-na, na-na-na-na-na.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Danny Marie. And you've got one more to share, I understand, called Fix This Broken Heart?
Yes. Sometimes there's somebody in your life that you are absolutely in love with, and you allow them to string you along simply because having a little bit of them is better than having none of them. And so I wrote this song about that, and then finding the strength to have enough confidence in yourself to realize, you know, you're worth more than that. You're worth somebody who will, you know, pursue you and love you equally. And that's what I wrote this song about.
Yeah, that's a very positive theme out of something that I think is a universal emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's listen now to an excerpt from Fix My Broken Heart.
When you said break up, I thought you'd take it back. Instead, you kept your word, gave me a heart attack. But when you called it off, you kept calling me back. Playing hard, tug of war, left me with a scar. I can't move on, I'm paralyzed. When I see those brown eyes, it's like I'm hypnotized. So when you call me, I meet you in the rain, and we dance real slow. Kiss you and your chunk in the dust will blow. Tailgate for two till dawn. Wish I'm shooting stars. You keep me hanging. I can fix this apart.
Well, you certainly have a lot of talent, Danny Marie. Now, you're doing some local performances. I understand you just played at the B&S Brewery out here in Santee. People want to come hear you live and in person. Where are you playing next?
Yes. I also have a performance coming up at the House of Blues on Tuesday, February 3rd at 7 p.m. in the Voodoo Lounge, also known as the Salvation Alley Stage, and that should be a lot of fun.
Very good. In San Diego. We'll certainly look forward to that. And if listeners want to find out more information about you, Danny Marie, or hear some more of your music online, where can they go?
Yes, my official website is DannyMarie.com. That's DannyMarie.com. And I am a huge Instagram fanatic and Facebook and Twitter. And you can connect with me on all those outlets. My Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter name is LoveDannyMarie.
Wonderful. Well, Danny Marie, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. We appreciate you joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you. It's been a blast.
This is a breaking news alert live from the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service.
This is Leon Thompson with an update from the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. Thanks to the recent rains, CAL FIRE San Diego Unit has lifted the ban on burning within its state responsibility area in San Diego County effective Monday, December 8th. While cooler temperatures have helped to diminish the threat of wildfire, residents are asked to use caution while conducting debris burns. Burn permits are required for all burning projects and must be completed within the hours of 8:15 a.m. and 3 p.m. Residents must follow burning requirements and maintain control of their fire at all times. Property owners may be held liable if a fire escapes their control and/or burns the property of a neighbor. Here are the residential burning requirements. First, only dry, natural vegetative materials such as leaves, pine needles, and tree trimmings that originated on the property may be burned. Burning household garbage is not allowed. Piles can be no larger than 4 feet in diameter. Provide clearance around the pile that is 10 feet in diameter by removing all material that will burn down to bare soil. Have a water source on hand, such as a garden hose or a pump-type water extinguisher that holds at least 5 gallons. A responsible adult needs to be in attendance at all times, and please, never burn on windy days. A permit for burns is needed. You can contact your nearest CAL FIRE station or local fire department to acquire the proper permits. Residents can confirm burn day status by calling the Air Pollution Control District at 858-586-2600 or your local fire department. For more information on how to safely burn outdoors, visit preventwildfireca.org.
The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
Oil and gas developers are getting a sweet deal for their projects on public land, according to a new report that says taxpayers are losing out as a result. Taxpayers for Common Sense claims the government isn't collecting sufficient royalties. Because current rules don't charge energy companies for the gas they use at drilling sites or for what's lost through the burn-off process known as flaring. Ryan Alexander, who heads the watchdog group, says these giveaways add up, and on federal or state land, no one is doing much to discourage them.
California was another state where there was really a high percent of gas that was extracted not brought to market. 17% of the gas in this eight-year period that was extracted was either used or flared or vented into the atmosphere, and I think that's really troubling numbers.
The report called Burning Money says in an eight-year period from 2006 through 2013, oil and gas companies drilling on federal land either wasted or used gas for free worth $380 million. It's known as beneficial use when an energy company powers its own equipment with fuel produced at a well site. And when gas is leaked or flared, it's termed unavoidably lost. But Alexander points out during the study period, the total amount of gas that operators said they sold decreased by 26%, while their unavoidable losses increased by 23%.
I think the idea of avoidably or unavoidably lost is a flawed concept. I think we really need to be thinking about reducing as much waste as possible and making sure that the taxpayers are being paid for every single ounce of gas that's coming out of public lands.
She adds many people don't realize that royalties are among the biggest sources of revenue to the federal government after taxes. To encourage less waste and a better return for resources from public land, the group recommends updating the rules on royalty payment exceptions that were made in the 1940s. For Public News Service, I'm Chris Thomas.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.